This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. It is Friday, March 29th. We are almost done with March, and we're live today, which is really exciting. We are live, which means you can also call in and talk to us. I'm going to give you that number, 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. You can also call our voicemail line if you have questions or comments about a show, and that you can do whatever time of day or night you want. That number is 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. Let me tell you about today's guest. Cameron Glover is a writer, sex educator, and host of the explosively informative and entertaining podcast, Sex Ed in Color. Cameron specializes in developing resources which help individuals embrace their personal power through exploring identity, social justice, and the sexual experience. Through insightful interviews and thought-provoking solo episodes, Sex Ed in Color navigates the complexities of sexuality as uniquely experienced by people of color. Welcome to Sex Out Loud.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me, Tristan.
Give me a little background about how you became you.
So way back when, no, I won't go that far back.
You can go as far back as you want. We have an hour, so it's like.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot to wade through, so I'll speed it up a little bit. So my background is in writing. I was a freelance writer for many, many years, and I started off writing in culture and naturally veered into sex writing. And I just became super curious and fascinated by the way that sex interconnects with all these other avenues of our lives. And as a Black woman, as somebody with chronic pain, as a queer person, like I had a lot of questions about how my identity also was impacted by all these things as well, that I felt like was not being seen and heard in the same ways that people with privilege like have their experiences recognized. So, of course, me being me, I said, you know what, I don't want to wait for someone else to do this. I'm going to do it myself. So I got more into writing about sex professionally, and I eventually felt like that wasn't enough. Like, I wanted to work with people directly and have a more personal connection with impacting and education. So I started looking at options to become a sex educator. And from there, I've started leading workshops. I started my podcast, Sex Ed in Color. And I'm really starting to like dive more into this space. And I'm just so excited by the work that I do and the impact that people allow me to have with them.
I love your writing. I know you've been published in Healthline, Allure, Glamour, Slate, and you contribute regularly to Playboy as a columnist. So I want to talk about this article you wrote for Playboy called Sex Ed in America is Whitewashed. Here's how that could change. Let's talk about some of the points you make in this piece about sex ed being created by and essentially centered around white people and white bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's, I I don't know. I feel like because of my experiences, like I am always hyper aware of the ways that I am personally othered and the ways that my communities are also othered. So for me, it kind of like almost immediately, as soon as I started diving into sex and sex education as a sexuality professional, I felt like these were major, major gaps that were not being filled right away. So even through my certification program, which is progressive and great and awesome, and I've learned so much from it, I still feel like I was struggling with feeling like the questions that I had that were very community specific were still seen as othered or like kind of like an extra. They weren't seen as a centralized experience in the same ways that the assumption that the people that I'd be working with would be white or able-bodied or straight or monosexual or anything like that, right? So writing this article, that was really important for me because I feel like a lot of times when marginalized people interact with these things, there's this feeling of like shame and almost like self-gaslighting because we're like, I don't know if I'm making up this problem or if this problem is really like as serious as I think it is. And I think that it's important to validate that. Like, yes, this is a very serious issue. And it's important that we don't have a monolithic space, especially in something like sex and sexuality, which is so tied to liberation and social justice and all these other really important issues that impact people's lives inside the bedroom and outside of it. So in saying that sex ed is whitewashed and we need to change it, I'm not just saying that, like, you know, it's not enough that we talk about sex from the lens of people of color and Black folks, but like we also talk about the barriers that keep people from collective pleasure and sex liberation. So,
well, yeah. And I think we see all of that in material ways. You know, I'm thinking about who is most likely to be diagnosed with a new case of HIV this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Black men of color. It's Black men who are having sex with men, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's a reason that when we talk about sexual health and we exclude all these folks, there's a reason then that the numbers and the statistics and their like lived experience of sexuality is so different.
Exactly. And I think also too, there's a lot of things that get left out of this conversation. So like using this example, right, about Black male sexuality specifically, we're leaving out the stigmas that particularly impact men, like in general, when it comes to exploration, feeling affirmed in exploring sexuality as a fluidity and as a spectrum and not just a fixed point, right? And then specifically for the Black experience, like there is a very specific history of racism and anti-Blackness in this country, and that has impacted a lot of our understanding of feeling like we can own pleasure to begin with, and what pleasure can look like because of other people's expectations of that as well. So all these things, even outside of just like a health perspective, also impact the ways and the entry points that Black folks and Black men and other people can like experience and define pleasure and sexuality for themselves.
And I think if you constantly don't see yourself represented. I mean, this also makes me think of how most sex ed programs in America can't talk about queer people.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're like actually won't get funding if they do. I mean, mm-hmm. it's not like, oh, you have the choice or you don't have the choice. I mean, it's like written into the shit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so there's like a ton of queer kids in high school right now in health class thinking, wait, what about me? Like this doesn't apply to me. So mm-hmm. what about my sexual desires, my sexual practices, my sexual safety? It's like, it's completely ignored.
Yeah. Yeah. And wow, that's like flashing me back to my own really mediocre sex ed experience in high school too, because there was none of that. There was no talk of pleasure. There was no talk of sex being something that was a choice for anyone. And there definitely wasn't any queer inclusive sex ed at all. And it took me a really long time to navigate that too. And like, realize that like, this is important, but also like there are resources that are available to me, because for so long, they just like weren't a priority in the spaces that I had access to.
I mean, I also had just really basic, bad sex education in public school, you know, where there was like a film strip and the boys and the girls were separated. And
oh, man.
I just remember, I remember that the one thing that stuck with me like in the sixth grade class was fallopian tubes. And like thinking back on that now, it's just not a useful piece of information. It's not really one of the most critical things that you need to know.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like I remember the very first day of health class, because it wasn't like a specific sex education
class. No, right.
Class,
so it's right. Health.
Yeah. And I remember it was the third semester of my fourth semester high school experience, and I was a senior. Right. And I remember my gym teacher walking in, and she opens her book and like, we're getting started. And she's just like, well, most of y'all are having sex anyway, so we don't have to get there right now. And I just remember thinking, wow, that's really bad and dangerous. Like, A, the assumption that like all that we're all having sex is really harmful, right?
Yes.
And really aphobic. And then also like, if we're having sex, how do you know that we're having pleasurable, like informed, like
consensual,
exactly,
yeah,
that we have the tools and the language to have the sex we want to be having. Like, I just remember like 17-year-old me just being like, wow, like this is super like not right, but then also not really having the resources or the language to explore that, and then having to navigate that on my own through like, you know, internet searches and like asking my friends. Like, I think stuff that a lot of people feel like they have to navigate when it comes to learning about sex and sex education.
And this reminds me, on my Twitter feed this week, someone named Dr. Klom, who is an actual doctor, but I don't actually know their name, posted on Twitter, hey, LGBTQIA Twitter, what do you want your doctors to know about inclusivity? What's the one or two big things you wish they knew about the LGBTQIA community or you without being told? And my response to this was, and I don't respond very often on Twitter, so this is like really push a button, was if you don't have competence in sex positivity, non-monogamy, race, kink, sex work, disability, then you're actually not LGBTQIA competent.
Yes, yes, exactly. Oh,
this
man,
notion that like doctors like don't need to know about queer people because like everyone's the same. Everyone's coming in and like they're getting a pap smear or they have a cold. And it's like, it's just bodies to me. And it's just files and numbers. And it's like, actually there are cultural differences within our communities that need to be acknowledged.
Yes, exactly. Like I don't know a single person in my life that has not had a horrific experience with a doctor because of their identity. So in navigating like being queer or being non-monogamous or being kinky or even just being of color, like horrific experiences with doctors because they're just not informed on how to be inclusive and caring with a patient.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like some of the conferences I've attended lately give me like a slight bit of hope. I mean, I've talked to a lot of public health workers, and I feel like they now, at least they go to presentations where people tell them that like marginalized folks and minorities like need to be taken into account at every level of the process, and that you can't ignore it. Like, you know what I mean? Like we can't ignore all the ways in which these different identities actually impact our health and how we access it and how often we access it and then what kind of experiences we have when we get there. I'm wondering what your answer to the question would be. What's one or two big things you wished that doctors knew about queer folks?
Oh, wow. So I think first and foremost, STI stigma and testing is the biggest thing that is coming to my mind. So in navigating around language and how to talk about STI, so like I actually had doctors using like dirty and clean language, and that is very traumatizing and very harmful. So even just moving away from that, but also in like navigating how we talk about STIs in when we're looking at non-monogamous patients, when we're looking at patients that are kinky. Like I had a situation where I was dating non-monogamously and I was going for an STI test, and the nurse that was with me, she was asking me questions and they were like yes or no questions, but it was very hard for me to answer because I was like, well, this doesn't leave room for any kind of nuance. So I think it was something like, is your partner dating other people and do you want them to be? And I was like, how do I answer this?
Wait, what?
Yes. Yes. And I was just like, looking at her like, what kind of question is this? And I was, and I answered the second question with yes, like, obviously, like, I, like, it's fine. Like, that's the whole point, right? Mm-hmm. And she kind of, she looks at me very sympathetically and puts her, like, arm on mine. And she's like, no, if you don't want them to be, like, you can say no, like, it's okay. And I'm just like, but...
Is this a fucking after school special? You didn't even come here. Like, you didn't even ask her advice.
I was just like, what is happening? And then, of course, like me, like I have the language and the foundation now, like being in the field to know better. But I'm like, wow, like what if I was anyone else, you know, coming in and like, how would that impact me? And that just like really struck me as like, this is something that like medical professionals need to like understand, because this is, this can really like impact somebody's life in a very unhealthy way.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll probably, I mean, that's probably like my first, second and last answer. Like, okay. And especially regarding around like how we talk about STIs as well.
So we got to take our first commercial break. We ran over there a little. I got a little caught up and I was ignoring A-Rod, and he was messaging me being like, we have to go to commercial break. And I was like, oh, sorry, I wasn't ignoring you, but I sort of was. Okay, so A-Rod, we're going. We're going to commercial break, and when we come back, more with Cameron Glover. The Pleasure Chest has a lot going on in the month of March. In honor of International Women's Day, Le Wand released a special edition Feel My Power Wand Vibrator. And it's one of the most beautiful toys I've ever seen and had the pleasure of using. You can get yours at Pleasure Chest. And if you buy any Le Wand massager, you get a cool gift pack while supplies last. March 17th to the 24th is Spring Fling. Spend $75 or more online and receive a free pocket rocket and free shipping. As always, there are a ton of great classes this month at their New York, LA, and Chicago locations. From impact play to sex over 40 to blowjobs and beyond. Go to pleasurechest.com to find out more. Use coupon code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle with purchase. Are you taking your vitamins? Well, ever since I started taking mine, I feel great. With the winter blues coming to an end, it is time to get back into a routine that helps you feel your healthiest. It's really this simple. Care of's fun online quiz asks you about your diet, health goals, and lifestyle choices, and takes only 5 minutes to find out your personal, scientifically backed vitamin and supplement recommendations. It was fast, it was easy, it got right to the point. Seriously, it takes longer to fill out your profile on a hookup app. Your personalized Care of subscription box gets sent right to your door every month. The daily packets have your name on them, and they are great for anyone on the go. There are also vegan and vegetarian options available. A portion of every sale goes toward the Good Plus Foundation, which provides expectant mothers in need with valuable prenatal vitamins. For 50% off your first month of personalized Care of vitamins, go to takecareof.com and enter promo code Tristan50. That's takecareof.com, promo code Tristan50.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com. You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, are you thinking about maybe dipping your toe in the water of therapy? Or maybe you've been to therapy, but now you want to get back into it? If so, there is this new option, you know, where technology essentially works for us, and it's called BetterHelp Online Counseling. It offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in all kinds of issues, from depression and anxiety to relationships and trauma. And basically, you connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential and it's convenient. And basically, you can set up this thing so that you're getting help at your own time and at your own pace, which I think is really useful for people who face barriers, which may be financial, maybe about transportation, maybe about taking off work. You schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus you can chat and text with your therapist. It's a truly affordable option, and I'm going to make it even more affordable because Sex Out Loud listeners get 10% off your first month with the discount code LOUDSEX. I feel I've trained you over 6.5 years to always use a coupon code Tristan or Tristan with a number, but that's not going to work in this situation, people. You have to use the code LOUDSEX. You can get started today by going to betterhelp.com/loudsex. You fill out a questionnaire and you can be matched with one of 4,000 U.S. licensed therapists and therapists worldwide. betterhelp.com/loudsex. Okay, we are back and we are talking with Cameron Glover, and she runs this newish podcast, which you must all listen to, called Sex Ed in Color. So recently, I listened to an episode today. Okay, so there's a few things. The episode was labeled Black History Month and Porn with Hello Rooster. Hello Rooster is a performer and also a maker of porn. And so the first thing I want to say is it was an amazing, amazing discussion.
Oh, thank you so much.
But also, I feel that the title Black History Month and Porn doesn't really do justice because
yeah,
in this, like, I don't even know how long it was, but in the span of this time, you guys cover so many different topics and you go so deep into them that I feel like, you know, that Black History Month and Porn just kind of doesn't really do it justice. No, it was just a really incredible, and it was real and it was honest. And I felt like they were unafraid to kind of say, hey, these are my experiences in ethical porn and feminist porn. One of the things that you talked about that struck me was that often Black people and people of color aren't given credit, aren't cited, their labor isn't respected in sexuality spaces. And Rooster talked specifically about this concept of receipts. I'm hoping you might recap some of that for me.
Mm-hmm. No, as you were talking, I'm nodding profusely like, yes, yes, yes. So yeah, first of all, thank you so much. That was an amazing episode too. And I do want to point out that in the creation of Sex Ed in Color, in centering Black and non-Black people of color and making a show where those are people that I'm exclusively talking to and sharing space with, I think that it's also really vital that for me as a civilian sex educator, that I'm also doing my part in sharing my community and my space with sex workers as well. So it really means a lot when I hear that episodes with Rooster. I did another episode in February with my friend SX Noir as well, where we also talked about sex work and digisexuality. And those are the episodes that people, I think, are most impacted by. And that makes me feel really good because that shows by example, like, not only like the incredible diverse experiences that we have in the field as Black folks, but also that, like, in centering sex workers, we're getting a richer, more vital collection of voices and work as well. And I think that the sexuality field has a long way to go to dismantle whorephobia and to be better for our sex worker siblings. But
100%, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So I'm like, this generally makes me so happy whenever people like comment on these episodes specifically and say that they've learned so much, because I also learned like a lot in that episode. Like I feel like I didn't really talk that much because I was like, Rooster, just like take over. And I was taking notes the whole time. And it's just, it means the world to me to hear that. And I know it means the world to Rooster as well. So thank you. Yeah. The point that you made specifically about receipts is something that I also think about a lot too. So in talking about having receipts, it is a kind of protection, I think, that a lot of marginalized people have in having some sort of like evidence, right? That a transaction has gone down, that we have been wronged in some way. And that protection like helps us feel more secure. And it can also help with what kind of retribution and like healing process we go through depending on, you know, what the situation is. So I actually had a situation after this episode that I thought a lot about receipt culture and calling in and calling out. So I wrote a piece for Playboy as well, and it was on the Netflix show Sex Education. And I interviewed three sex therapists to get their perspective about how the show matched up to the realities of the field. And that article was so important to me because my editor that I worked with, Anita Little, is Black, and all of the sources that I had in the piece are also all Black women. And I really wanted to make a point to do that because I think that you're absolutely right. Like, there are not enough Black and non-Black people of color that are cited in sexuality as experts. And when we are cited, we need to speak almost exclusively about our pain and our experiences with identity. And that just gets tiring now. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that like we need to be carving out more spaces to do that. And also white folks as well in the field and in the writing space as well need to do a much better job at citing us as experts and not just experts in our experience.
This is such a huge point. I mean, I read that piece and I noticed that I was like, oh, all these people are people of color. So that part was noted. But you're right. They were talking about representations of sex therapy and sex therapists on television, on mainstream television. Mm-hmm. Right. So this distinction is subtle and I didn't catch it until you just said it. I caught that they were all people of color. I did not catch the second part, which is that they weren't talking just about people of color or just about, in the case of lay people, just about trauma, essentially, right? We often, those are the stories we want to hear from people of color. It's just trauma over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a really crucial thing that everyone, but especially white people, think about every time you're going to hire someone to do a class, interview someone for an article, put on an event and hire presenters and teachers, that you not stick with the kind of usual suspects. Because the usual suspects as defined in sex education right now are all white.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't need to be, because actually there are a ton of people of color doing amazing work. So there's literally no excuse. It's just that white voices have been elevated above people of color's voices. But everyone is out there. You just need to do like your due diligence. I'm saying this as a white person to other white people. Okay.
No, and I really appreciate that. Like, I was talking to a writer friend of mine, and I was like, who also writes for Playboy, and I was like, hey, if you ever need experts for sources, for pieces, like, let me know. I'm more than happy to let my network know, because this is important. And we, like, you're absolutely right. Like, we need to collectively all be doing so much better. And this goes beyond race as well, but it's very important that we highlight the specifics of citing Black and non-Black people of color, as well as experts in their areas of expertise and not just their experience or their pain in, like, trauma porn, as you put it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Such a good point. Thank you for that. No, really.
Thank you.
because I was like, oh, I know what I see what she's doing here, but I didn't see it all. I didn't see the whole picture. Okay. I think we're going to take a commercial break. That's a good stopping point. When we come back, I want to talk about more about your coaching and one-on-one practice, working with people. And you also have this thing coming up, which is an intensive that I want people to know about. So everyone, listen to these commercials. Thank you to Pleasure Chest, my amazing sponsor who makes the show possible, and all my other advertisers. And we will be back in a moment.
The Pleasure Chest has a lot going on in the month of March. In honor of International Women's Day, Le Wand released a special edition Feel My Power Wand Vibrator. And it's one of the most beautiful toys I've ever seen and had the pleasure of using. You can get yours at Pleasure Chest. And if you buy any Le Wand massager, you get a cool gift pack while supplies last. March 17th to the 24th is Spring Fling. Spend $75 or more online and receive a free pocket rocket and free shipping. As always, there are a ton of great classes this month at their New York, LA, and Chicago locations. From impact play to sex over 40 to blowjobs and beyond. Go to pleasurechest.com to find out more. Use coupon code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle with purchase. Tasty Hole. It's the world's first flavored butthole scrub to enhance the rimming experience. It gently exfoliates the external part of the anus and flavors it. Think glazed donut hole, peach ring, hot vanilla latte, and cherry gobbler. When I first heard about this product, it did seem like a novelty, but I think it's the perfect gateway for beginning rimmers. It encourages you to dive in and eat some ass. And anything that does that is awesome in my book. Find it at tastyholescrub.com. Use code Tristan for $10 off your order. That's tastyholescrub.com.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, are you stressed out? I am. And it's not surprising that a lot of us are under a lot of stress because we work too much, we do too much, we overextend ourselves, and then we also go on social media, which can entertain, but also overwhelm and traumatize. Come on, let's face it. And then when you're stressed out, everything sort of gets out of balance in your life. You know, your physical health, your emotional health, your psychological health, everything is affected by stress. I started meditating about 8 years ago, and it really changed my life. It really did for the better, and I can't like live without it now. So I was really excited when this new advertiser came on board, which is Calm, the number one app to help you reduce your anxiety and stress and help you sleep better. More than 40 million people around the world have already downloaded it. And if you head over to calm.com/Tristan, you're going to get what? A discount, 25% off a Calm premium subscription, which includes guided meditations on issues like anxiety, stress, focus, including a brand new meditation each day. There are also sleep stories, which are like bedtime stories to help you relax before bed. They even have lots of like soothing music and other great stuff. I think the trickiest thing about starting to meditate is not necessarily knowing where to begin or how to begin. And so I think guided meditations are a great way so that you're not just sort of sitting there not knowing what to do. And with these, it's like in the palm of your hand on your phone. So go to calm.com/Tristan. That's Calm, calm.com/Tristan. Get 25% off. You're going to have unlimited access to all of their content. And maybe you're going to help lower your stress because we all need to get a little bit calm. I really like that one. I really believe in that one, you guys. I hope that didn't sound too much like a commercial because I really use that app for in real life. Okay, we're back today. and we're talking with Cameron Glover. Cameron, you also do one-on-one coaching with folks, and you have this course coming up called Fluorescence, which is a great name, by the way.
Thank you.
Tell me about that. What is it?
Oh my gosh, yes. So like I mentioned before, I have experience with working, doing workshops and hosting events. I'm hosting an event this Sunday, March 31st. But I do really love working with people directly and having that one-on-one connection with folks. And I think that especially in focusing on sex ed through a lens of social justice and pleasure, something that really came up for me and a lot of the people that I've worked with has been, how do I navigate that? How do I unpack what this looks like for me and how this fits into my life? So with that in mind, I am launching my first course, which is called Fluorescence. And I love that you love the name because I love it too. And it's intentionally created for the sexual wallflower. So for a very long time, like, I struggled with figuring out and navigating what pleasure looked like for me. And then also this idea of what sexy looked like, because I had a very particular idea of what sexy was because of media and what other people were telling me. But I really struggle with that personally, because I'm like, well, if I don't match up to that, can I not be sexy now? Mm-hmm. And especially when these images, again, like everything we've been talking about, don't include being a Black or non-Black person of color, when it doesn't include people that have disabilities or queer or trans or people of size or marginalized in any way, that really impacts and limits like being able to see yourself as that thing. And so I really wanted to make this course to help people navigate what sexy looks like for them on their own terms, without this idea that we need to change physically who we are to meet the certain level of worthiness, right, to become sexy. And so the whole idea behind Fluorescence is helping the sexual wallflower, as I like to call, as I like to use, to help them bloom. And by bloom, like really understanding and breaking down what sexy is going to look like for you, how that's going to fit into your life, and then giving you the tools to really take that far and beyond the course as well. So I'm so excited for it.
And how? When does it start? So how? What do people do?
Yeah,
you're going to go to your website,
of course. Right? Yes.
Okay.
And right at the top bar, you're going to go to Fluorescence, and you're going to come to a very pretty page breaking down all of the information that you need to know. It is a 6-week course, like I said, starting Wednesday, May 1st.
Okay, so we've got time. We've got a month.
Yes.
May 1st, okay.
Yes, and this is going to be a very limited run, so I'm only taking 10 applicants because I really want this to be a motivated, like close-knit, inclusive group. And I really want to make sure that people are comfortable, because we're going to be diving into things that maybe you haven't dived into before and maybe bring up a lot of stuff. So I want to make sure that I am present to hold space for that, and that also there is an intentional community to hold space for you as well. So it breaks down what exactly we'll be doing for the 6 weeks. And at the very end, at the very bottom of the page, there is a lovely raspberry red apply here button that takes you to a form, and you fill out that form and I ask you a few questions about where you are in your journey and getting a bit of information about who you are. And then if we're a match, you'll be hearing back from me, and then we'll figure things out from there.
Okay, I want to dive into this idea of a sexual wallflower. This isn't a phrase that you hear very often. And wallflower brings to mind for me like a certain set of things, which is like shy or awkward or doesn't fit in or feels like on the outside, doesn't feel like they're with the cool kids. Mm-hmm. So I'm wanting to see like how you're, like who this is for, like who it's right for, and how you would define a sexual wallflower. Or is it just someone who like hasn't come into their own yet?
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad that you asked that question. So also, if you go to the site and click on the Fluorescence page, you'll see there's a lot of flower imagery. Like I love flowers personally. Like I love nature. And I think that they tie in really beautifully to this idea of a journey within navigating sexuality, right? And this idea of blooming and coming into yourself and coming into your own is super powerful imagery. And I think that that's something that really resonates with folks. But this idea of a sexual wallflower, that is a term that kind of came to me and I was just like, you know what, I'm going to run with this. But I really see that as being someone kind of all the above. So again, people that kind of feel like maybe they're awkward or maybe they just don't know how to start. Like they're excited and they want to become sexy, but they're stuck on this idea of beating themselves up or feeling like they need to, if only I can do this thing or if only I can fit into this box. I consider those people to be sexual wallflowers as well. Anybody that is dreaming about a juicy and vibrant reality that prioritizes pleasure and romance and living your life in color and living your life on your own terms, but you don't know how to get there, like you are a sexual wallflower. And there is no shame in that because we all start from somewhere, right? And so many of us, I think, are sexual wallflowers more than we'd like to admit. And the beautiful part is that because we all have different experiences and entry points, this idea of getting to a place where we're blooming, that looks different for everybody. There mm-hmm. is no like one specific mold that I'm going to help you navigate to. It's all individualized. And it, like I said, it goes far beyond the bedroom too. Like being sexy is being empowered. It's being in control of your life. It is feeling affirmed in the choices that you make, in the people that you surround yourself by, in how you feel about yourself. Like these are all really important things. And that ultimately helps you to bloom and continue navigating on this beautiful journey.
And I also imagine, you know, blooming has its cycles in nature. Mm-hmm. You also could be someone who had the bloom, lost the bloom for whatever set of circumstances, experiences, reasons, and you want to get it back. You're not going to get it back like the same exact way it was. But mm-hmm. I also see, I see this a lot, especially for cis women, is getting to a point in middle age and being like, oh, wait, where did that other person go? And why am I in this relationship or this marriage where I'm not sexually satisfied, or I'm not getting my needs met, I'm not free and authentic with my partner? So it seems like if you've never bloomed, it's good, but you may have bloomed and then sort of like, you know, gotten out of the sun for a while and maybe yes. get back
exactly.
to keep going with the metaphor. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Finding new ways to bloom is also
something.
And I'm really glad that you brought that up as well, because we're not meant to stay the exact same. We're meant to change and to grow and to learn and become different versions of ourselves throughout our lives. Right. And again, I think that this is super important when we're talking about sexuality, because like you said, like so many people struggle with this ideal and then feel shame and guilt when circumstances change. And I think that you're right. Like a lot of cis women especially like feel this pressure to conform when we hit certain life cycle points. So like getting married or having children or not having children or getting to a certain age, like this brings up a lot of societal pressure and like internalized pressure as well. But learning to bloom is not a one point stop. Like this is a journey that you're going to be on for the rest of your life, but having the tools to navigate that and to evolve along with that is such a beautiful, like empowering thing that just, it really just makes all the difference.
And from my experience talking to people, when I say like, when did you have either like a breakthrough experience or what you consider your sexual awakening or your sexual coming of age, it's actually at all different ages, all different ages, right? It's never too late is what I'm saying. And also as you age and your body changes, I'm like careening towards 50, like real fast. Mm-hmm. And my entire relationship to my body and sexuality has radically changed. And there needs to be like adjustment and rethinking and reframing, you know, my expectations, my desires, all of it, all of it.
Yeah. Oh, that really just like hits me right here. Like I just turned 26 and I feel like there's a lot of like, oh, you're young, you're fine. But in the last few months, I've really started to come to terms with my own identity as a person with chronic pain. And that's really shifted a lot for me in terms of not only feeling sexy, but navigating what sex and pleasure looks like for me. when I feel pain and when I have to navigate that. And coming to grips with the limitations of like my own body was something I really struggle with. And thankfully I have a really great support system and network, but ultimately like this process that I'm going to be helping people walk through has really helped me in refinding that and redefining what sexy and blooming and being a sexually empowered person looks like for me. And I just feel like, yes, like this is what 17-year-old me wished that I had when I had that really horrible sex ed class. This is what 19-year-old me wished that I had when I was in college trying to navigate my way through, you know, like it all connects. And I think that a lot of people have shame around this idea that if I don't, you know, have this blooming process when I have my sexual debuts, and like, it's too late for me. But you're absolutely right. Like, it's never too late. And in fact, you're going to have multiple blooming processes throughout your years. So, yeah.
I mean, I'm also someone who lives with chronic pain. And I think accepting the limitations of my own body has been one of the hardest things for me. As someone who was once really could do most anything. I mean, not lift heavy things, but certainly could get into any sexual position. Certainly could have sex for long periods of time, had endurance. And now there are these realities of what my body can and can't do. And also, you know, everyone has different treatments. For me, pain medication does work on my chronic pain, but the trade-off is, not only can I not like think with 100% of my brain, I can't drive. I'm not allowed to use any knives because there was a big accident on New Year's Eve. I can't cut anything anymore. I almost chopped my finger off. But
oh no,
I have to choose between pleasure and pain meds, because when I am on pain meds, everything is dampened. Everything. The actual sensations in my body, I don't feel as strongly. I can't have an orgasm when I'm on pain meds. So I'm constantly forced with like this choice, which is really intense.
Oh, wow. I feel that so much. My chronic pain is focused on my back, which, I mean, I normally have pretty good days, but there are some days where my back pain like flares up and it just makes it so difficult to even like get out of bed, you know. And I think that you're right. A lot of, especially the flexibility and like not taking breaks and like having endurance, that was a really big thing for me to like reframe my thinking around. I was like really beating myself up because I'm like, wow, if I like tell my partner or like tell myself if I'm having a solo session, like I need a break, then like I'm bad and I don't deserve pleasure. And like all these really like self-negative, you know, things, right? Which is so wild, because what we need is what we need. And even if we need to stop in the middle of a sexual experience, like there's nothing wrong with that. Like learning to take care of yourself and have boundaries and work within the limitations of what you can realistically do, like that is part of taking care of yourself and showing yourself love too.
And I am reminded on a daily basis, and I just had this great conversation with Andrew Gerza, who's a great activist.
Yes,
we are all temporarily able. We are all temporarily able-bodied. At some point, your body is going to change drastically. So you are just right now, if you identify as able-bodied, it's a temporary condition.
Yes. There was a beautiful quote that I heard, and I can't place it right now, but talking about disability, and that like disability is the only marginalized identity that anyone can enter at any point of their lives. And that gave me a real like sense of comfort and not like doom, right? Because it's like, wow, okay. So like that makes it even more important that we learn how to navigate this and see disability as not like an other thing, but like this is a reality that most of us are going to experience. And then this truly impacts all of us, right? And I'm so glad that you talked to Andrew Gerza too. He's amazing.
No, he's great. I've had him on the podcast, but not in a really long time. And now he's started this great hashtag, which has really caught on social media, which is disabled people are hot. So I want to talk to him more about that. But I just think I just like to talk more about it. It's like really hard for me to talk about my pain and, you know, not being like the sex party girl I once was.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it's like, it's hard. It's hard. Oh, when you're,
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to navigate with partners and all that stuff. It's just, mm-hmm. it's difficult. Okay. We've got a few more minutes. I did want to talk about this other piece that you wrote for Slate.
Okay.
Called It's Time to Recenter Kink and BDSM as Part of Radical Queer History. So this is something I think a lot about, and that is like how parts of queer sexual history and queer culture are left out of the discussion. Like as we become this more mainstream movement, we white gay people, and I liked it. I liked in your podcast, you often say things are being gentrified, but it's not just like a neighborhood. It's like,
it is everything.
The blank industry. Yeah. The blank industry is being gentrified. So it's like queer sexual history is being gentrified as we speak and pushing all these like really radical parts out.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yes. And thank you so much for reading. That piece was, I was so happy to have that out because it was, yeah, something that I felt like I was thinking about a lot too. And I'm like, am I nuts? Like, am I imagining things? But no, I need to write about this. And I think that you're right. Yeah, like absolutely. There's so many things that are being gentrified, but specifically these movements and these spaces that are actually inclusive and vibrant and varied and have this rich history that people don't know about, even people within that community, mm-hmm. because it's been tailored to one specific lens and one specific gaze. And I think that that's wrong. So especially when we're talking about Queer History Month, which is in October too, this idea that, I mean, we're uplifting the same names over and over again, but I also see this trend of like getting rid of any kind of aspect of their lives that is, for lack of a better word, sexualized, right? Mm-hmm,
So if they were a sex worker, if they're a leather person, yes. we're going to just leave that out.
Yes. Like we talked about this in the podcast episode I did with Hello Rooster as well, about how when we talk about Maya Angelou, right? Like she's heralded as this great writer, and she was an incredible human being, but she's also a sex worker. And that is a really important aspect of her identity. And that shapes a lot of her experience and a lot of her lens. And we can't talk about her history and her legacy and her impact today without talking about that. In the same ways that we talk about Marsha P. Johnson, we talk about so many amazing folks in throughout history. We take away their agency as sexual beings, and a lot of times their identities as sexuality professionals too. And this mm-hmm. gives a very skewed idea and plays into a lot of the sex negativity that we're seeing now and a lot of the censorship that we're seeing offline and online, and how people are talking about sex, because they're literally being punished, literally having their livelihoods and their lives threatened and are being killed because of people's sex negativity and inadversity to like talk about sex as a natural part of life. So yeah.
This is one of the things I love about the great writer Samuel Delaney. Mm-hmm. Samuel Delaney will remind you that he is a sexual being with very specific sexual tastes and desires and experiences. He'll let you go a few pages and then he will remind you.
I love that so much.
And it's like, it's so, I mean, it feels conscious on his part, and he's very, very thoughtful and brilliant, but it's funny because like you can get sort of caught up in this world and people are like, oh, isn't he an amazing like science fiction fantasy writer or whatever? But it's like, no, he'll remind you that mm-hmm. that this is about sex, and sex is a big part of his life. And I love that about him. He's unapologetic about it.
Yeah. And then again, circling back to some of the things he talked about as well and thinking about these things, I'm also aware of the privileges that other people will have in claiming a very sexual liberated multifaceted life as well, because there are social constraints to being a person of color, to being marginalized in any way, that makes it so that sometimes talking about sexual identity and being a sexuality professional in some context, like that will be more threatening or cause more violence. And that is something that we also need to be recognizant of. But in general, I think like a collective movement to being inclusive and not shying away from this very like the important parts of history that sexuality plays into it is like it's necessary, and we can't move forward if we're unwilling to do that.
Yeah. Oh my God, we're out of time, and I want to tell everyone how to get you. Okay, you're at CameronGlover.com.
Yes.
On Twitter and Instagram, you yourself are Black Girl Manifest, but it's BLK Girl Manifest.
Yes.
Then you're also at Sex Ed in Color. On Facebook, you are SEIC Podcast. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, this was such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Shout out to everyone who works on the show. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. The show's guests will be David and Amanda, the founders of Hashtag Open, a brand new dating app that holds so much promise that we all might revolutionize the way that we connect. Until then, catch me on social media and go over to patreon.com/TristanTaramino and see what I'm doing there and maybe support me. Bye.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.